2015, an elite DFS Army Commando unit formed to bring high-level DFS strategy to the masses. Today, hated by DFS sharks and lineup sellers alike, they continue their quest to turn Joe into DFS pro.
Taco Tuesday PGA DFS podcast presented to you by DFSArmy.com. This week we are at Pebble Beach, California, America's number one rated golf course for the Pebble Beach AT&T Pro-Am, a yearly event where professionals and amateurs and lots of celebrities get together for a Pro-Am, very similar to the American Express. Formerly the Desert Classic that we went to a few weeks ago, and it will be the same setup with a three-course rotation. You've got the Pebble Beach, the home course, along with Spyglass Hill and Monterey Peninsula, and a 54-hole cut, or a Saturday night cut, with special rules of top 60 and ties, so a much smaller field, a much smaller cut than we're used to. And it's a full person field, 156 people in here, so it's gonna be harder to make the cut, but everybody gets that extra round for free, guaranteed, and that's going to make those punt plays a little bit more viable this week, with those guys getting the extra round in. It'll help you be able to get the few studs in this field pretty easily on both sites here, FanDuel and DraftKings. Very easy to get to the upper end guys this week. Of course, not very many studs in this field. You got Dustin Johnson and Cantlay, Casey, Day, and Snedeker. That's all the 10K range. So a pretty weak field. Probably the weakest field that we've been to so far this year. But at least we got DJ as one big name up there. And of course, Cantlay, who's pretty incredible now. So next week, we got a completely packed field for the Genesis Invitational. But for now, yeah, the Pebble Beach Pro-Am. It's not the best event of the year. I think a lot of people dislike this event because the rounds take absolutely forever. You gotta wait for your amateurs to catch up with you. So this course, Pebble Beach, I hosted the 2019 US Open. But of course, as usual with the U.S. Open setup, they make the course a lot harder, and it's hosted U.S. Opens before in the past, and it will continue to in the future, but they make the course a lot harder. They didn't even stop playing it. They played it early in the year and then quickly set it up for the U.S. Open, and it should be back to normal where it plays around par, we'll talk about the courses a little bit here specifically, but with Pebble, they of course are going to make it a lot harder for the U.S. Open, but they've got to make it easier for this week because of the amateurs. A lot of this this whole tournament is set up to make it gettable for the amateurs, and these are three of the four shortest courses on tour, with TPC River Highlands being the second shortest and Pebble Beach being the shortest. And that's kind of what equalizes the field here a bit, but it plays so much longer than it seems because you've got some drastic elevation changes. But yeah, it should be similar to like recently we saw Quail Hollow host the PGA Championship, and the next year when they put it back to how they had it before and got rid of all the extra infrastructure that they needed for the major. The course went back to playing very similar to how it used to play. And unlike Quail Hollow, Pebble didn't even take a year off hosting the event. For this event last year, the Pebble Beach Pro-Am, it's such a big event, at obviously such a marquee course, that you know, of course, they're going to want to play there every year. You've got a lot of the same celebrities that like to show up. You know, Ray Romano, Larry the Cable Guy. You're going to have Dustin Johnson with his father-in-law, Wayne Gretzky. So, you know, a lot of the same names. You know, a lot of the people that play this event either play it every single year or they don't play it. You know, they tend to skip it. I know a lot of people aren't a fan of this kind of tournament layout. You know, you got Tiger skipping both this and the Desert Classic or American Express quite frequently. And yeah, other guys like Phil Mickelson, who not only come here every year, but show up and win. You know, he's got, you know, 3 top 2 finishes in the last 4 years here, winning it last year. So, yeah, it should be a pretty interesting event to take in, I guess. Whether or not you like it is up to you. But, yeah, before we get going into breaking down the courses here and then the field, I gotta let you know that at DFSArmy.com, you sign up today with promo code TACO. You get a lifetime 20% off discount. We cover all things daily fantasy sports, you know, crushing NBA. Last week, you know, we had a member come second in the $5 Drive the Green, taking home $40,000. So huge shout out to you, Apollo360. Congrats on that huge win. We had a $65,000 winner just in NBA the other day. Really a big week of lots of large wins. And you can come join our squad and get our content and Domination Station Lineup Optimizer, Research Station to help you dive into all the stats you could possibly need for not only golf, but for all the other sports as well. Of course, that's what I'll be referencing throughout this pod, the Research Station. And you can get access to that at dfsarmy.com with promo code TACO. You get you that lifetime 20% off discount. All right, so looking at these three courses here, you've got Pebble Beach, Spyglass Hill, and Monterey Peninsula, all right on the coast of California. Pebble Beach and Monterey a little bit more so out in the open and exposed and coastal. You've got, you know, Spyglass Hill, which is right next to Monterey, but it's a little bit more inland. It's got a lot more tree cover. So if things get really, really windy, we might want to go to using more of the Spyglass guys, maybe in Showdown or something. But honestly, these courses play very similar to each other overall. Monterey, it's a par 71, is where the other two are par 72s, and very, very short par 72s. It's very rare that you ever see a par 72 that's under 7,000 yards, but I've got Pebble Beach at 6,816 yards, Spyglass at 6,953, and Monterey is at 6,958, so very close to each other there. But despite having one less number on the par there, Monterey is the easiest course usually, playing about a quarter stroke under par usually, as where Pebble and Spyglass play around even par most of the time. The main difference between Pebble and the other two courses, of course, is they go to Pebble twice. Pebble's the one they had the U.S. Open at, and it's the only one that has ShotLink data. So it's the only one we're able to really dive in deep with, and the ShotLink data tells us one thing, and that is it's going to be a wedge fest. Nowhere else does a higher percentage of strokes come from 125 yards or less than right here at Pebble Beach. And I'm sure that's the case for Spyglass and Monterey as well. I'm sure they're really high up on the charts there as well. A few other courses that you might want to look at that are somewhat similar. The Safeway Open, also in California from the swing season, that's also a bit of a wedge fest. It's not quite as short of a course, but we see the similar amount of you know, huge uptick in strokes taken from under 125 yards. And also Kapalua, the Tournament of Champions. You know, it's right there in numbers as far as the percentage of extra strokes taken from 125 yards or less, probably because of, you know, all the par fives on that course, with it being a par 73. That one does have a lot of really weird stats about it. But going back to Pebble, It's third in number of fairway strokes taken each round, so strokes from the fairway. Very easy to hit these greens. Over 70% of greens are hit on Pebble Beach, and that is 10% higher than the tour average, 61%, all the other courses. But the driving distance, it's going to be extremely low, in the 270s on average. Everyone's going to club down. There's no reason to bomb it on a lot of these holes. You've got a lot of forced landing areas where you've got to land it a little bit short and club down, maybe hit irons off the tee. It's going to happen. You know, you want to place your drive more than crush it at pretty much all of these holes here. It's just kind of how it's set up. If you look at Monterey, Monterey is even easier to hit the green than at Pebble Beach. 74% of drives hitting the green at Monterey. And Spyglass is right around tour average at 64%. But yeah, for 3 out of 4 rounds, you're going to be playing on a course where almost everybody always hits the fairway. The hard part is going to be landing it on these greens. These are the smallest greens on the PGA Tour. It kind of makes, I guess, long putting not being as important, but really when you're looking at small greens, you're going to want to target guys with a great approach game. Off the tee, you know, it's kind of a mixed bag this week. Driving distance doesn't really matter. It's helpful, obviously. It's nice to be able to club down, have a little bit more control than, you know, some other guys might just have to hit a normal drive, even though it's, you know, a shorter, you know, there are a lot of short par fours on these courses, but it's just nice being able to hold back and go for control. But still, those old men, you know, who are 270 off the tee, they're not dead in the water like they would have been at, like, the Farmers or something, where you want to hit it really, really long all the time. So strokes gained approach, definitely targeting that a lot more than at most other courses, because hitting these heavily bunker-protected tiny greens is going to be absolutely crucial this week. The winner is probably someone who gets really hot with their irons and with their putter. Driver, not so much, and, you know, if you need to be scrambling too much, you're probably going to get in a bit of trouble anyway. But, you know, maybe take guys who are good out of the sand, as we see a ton of greenside bunkers that you need to hit out of. But that's probably a stat where I'm just going to check to make sure my guys are decent and just not absolutely horrible. But I'm also not going to put too much of a weighting on guys being really, really good out of the sand, because, I mean, theoretically, you don't even want to take shots out of the sand. It's just kind of how it is with this course. But I'm going to want to find the guys who are really good POA putters, who have really good irons that are in form right now, or, you know, someone that's just set to regress that's usually always a really good stroke scanned approach player. Definitely targeting that the most this week. And, you know, maybe giving a little bit of a bump to guys who are historically shorter off the tee, just because they're usually very, very good wedge players as it is. You know, that's just kind of how the old man game is, and you can definitely set yourself up for success with that here. Also want the good POA putters. And then for, like, showdown, when you're targeting the different courses, so Pebble Beach on DraftKings Showdown, guys average 31.8 fantasy points per round on that course, 31.4 on Spyglass. Spyglass would be considered the hardest course of these three. You know, it has a lower overall like all-time record. I think Phil Mickelson set that one a little while back, but and then looking at Monterey Peninsula, of course, that one's gonna be the easiest. Averages about 2 extra fantasy points, 33.7 fantasy points for Showdown on average. So you're going to want to target the guys from Monterey, but it's not like Torrey Pines, where you want to aggressively take almost everybody from the north. Like I said, there could be a situation where some wind comes up and you want to target the guys on Spyglass, perhaps. Or just, you know, some days maybe Pebble might just play a little easier and you want to target the guys on that course. But it's definitely worthwhile to, at least in Showdown, do some some core stacking. Maybe have most of your guys or all of your guys in your lineup on a certain course. And in week long, you can also kind of do that with a starting point, just to see if there's a 1-2-3 rotation that's easier. So I don't know which one to target exactly. I know they're going to put a lot of the studs together to most likely end up on Pebble Beach on Saturday so that they can get the cameras on them and the shot link data on them. But I don't really have too much of a strategy there. Of course, this honestly isn't really a week where I go balls to the wall and play a whole lot. It's one of those you kind of just get through one of them weeks before a really good tournament next week. But yeah, that's kind of how I'm going to approach things. You know, just like with the American Express, there's a general strategy to the 54-hole cut and the slightly reduced feel that makes the cut. Of course, going after those scrubs at the bottom and really targeting in on the studs in this field. You know, going more studs and duds than usual. I know a lot of people are going to try that, but the studs that are in this field, I do like them especially. Not as much Dustin Johnson, but Patrick Cantlay, he's going to be like core for me at $10,900. And other than that, it's really hard to pick too many guys to go in on, but I'm definitely finding myself on some of these like upper 9K guys and stuff. So, you know, being able to get to them using the guys in the mid 6Ks, you know, go farther than $6,500, and it's extremely hard to find a player that I would deem worthy of even rostering. But, you know, being able to get some of those scrubs in the mid 6K to lower 7K range, I'm going to feel a lot more confident about rostering than those guys than I would in a normal week where, you know, missing the cut is horrifyingly deadly. You can probably cash in cash games with a 4 out of 6 this week, especially if the 6 out of 6 rate is really low and a lot of the chalk misses the cut. So, looking at the field here, Dustin Johnson, he's pretty much the de facto king of Pebble Beach. You know, won back-to-back in 2009, 2010, top five finishes in 2012, 2014, 2015, 2017, 2018. Last year, T45 kind of really disappointed disappointed as the chalk. Let me catch myself there. Last year here, finishing T45, I think it was like 12K or so with I think 30-some% ownership. A very, very popular play that kind of busted for people. You know, obviously a lot of cheaper guys in him. Put a lot more fantasy points in him. This week, I think the ownership's going to be tamed a little bit, even though the options are a little more sparse this year as far as the studs. He's just been in kind of questionable form. His runner-up, I think, to Graham McDowell in Saudi last week over on the European Tour. He's been playing a little bit over there. 7th in the Century Tournament of Champions, you know, kind of whatever, but we haven't seen him at all through the swing season other than that. Coming off of that injury, the form's still a little bit questionable, but going by the odds, this is a classic 5-1, 6-1 sort of guy that you expect to be at 12K. I mean, that's the kind of implied odds, you know, over a 10% winning implied possibility percentage. You know, that's kind of what we target guys that are priced at 12K for. And he's 11-6 on DraftKings with no one else in the 11K range on a huge island all by himself. I think enough people go to guys like Casey Day to get him in, you know, the lower part of the 20%, maybe even the very highest of teens as far as ownership goes. But still, a lot of people are going to end up on DJ. The course history kind of speaks for itself. And historically, he's always really good at gaining fantasy points and stuff. Not so much recently, but I think a lot of it's because of the sample size is very small of what we've seen of him. We haven't seen him much since the playoffs recently, but you know, lately his numbers haven't been that great as far as like greens regulation, driving accuracy percentage, barely gaining fantasy points to the field, which is very absurd for him, but I'm definitely going to trust the long-term numbers there, which he's pretty much leading the field in most of the long-term numbers, with maybe Cantlay edging him in some parts. But Last 10 rounds, he's losing strokes approach, losing strokes off the tee, losing strokes around the green. It's a little bit concerning, but again, it's been, you know, really sparse what we've seen from him. You know, a lot of, he's been playing a lot, like, overseas and stuff, and there's not really a way to track how well he's been doing in those regards, but that sort of stuff's just going to keep his ownership low. But if you're just looking at it from a raw, like, Vegas perspective, this is a very good spot to spend up for a guy with a very, very high win probability. But we have seen, you know, we've seen guys like Rahm pay off at this price. We've also seen guys like Justin Thomas at the Sony miss the cut and completely fail at this price. And historically, I think over the last year, I think only 40% of golfers at, you know, this 11.5 to 12K range have even paid off or been worthwhile. But still, with the lack of talent in this field, DJ definitely is the best golfer by far. You know, if you go back enough, I mean, Phil obviously is the best in this field, but I don't know, Dustin Johnson, he wins every single year. I think the last 10 or 11 years, he has a win on tour. And, you know, back in 2009, 2010, this was the course that got it for him. You know, this is probably his best course. On one and done, this is definitely a very, very good spot to burn Dustin Johnson if you don't really want to save him for the majors, or if you're just not sure about where you're going to be using him with his kind of shaky form. Sort of like with Justin Rose, this is a really good spot to burn him where he's such a heavy favorite. But yeah, Dustin Johnson, I don't mind him for GPPs and stuff, but nowhere safe for cash. I much prefer Cantlay this week in pretty much all regards. Look at Cantlay here. Ranks number one projected round score. So DJ ranks sixth. Second in projected DraftKings points per round, where DJ ranks 40th. And why is that? Just to show you guys real quick. So a lot of the holes here are short par fours. If you average, you know, all the courses out together, so Pebble Beach twice, then once each for Monterey and Spyglass, you see 4.75 short par fours per round. It's the most common hole type. You only see two long par fours per round, which is crazy because usually long par fours, medium par fours are the most common hole types. Usually you'll see like three or four, up to like five or six per round at certain courses. Now, Dustin Johnson, he does his best work with long par fives and especially long par fours, where he is number one in the field, and it's not really close. But, you know, just this course, you know, the course is obviously going to set up a lot more for the shorter par fives and fours. And, you know, Cantlay, he's number one in the field in medium length par four scoring, number three in the field at short par four scoring, number one in DraftKings scoring on short par fours. And, you know, good at all the par five ranges, but, you know, just rates out better than DJ a little bit this week. He's 10-1, so he's a very solid second favorite. Big gap between him and Casey and Day. If you look at, you know, fantasy points gains almost 40 to the field on average recently, long term 27. Compare that to Dustin Johnson's 21. Even, you know, birdies are better gained. Lately, it's been absurd with him, gaining almost six birdies to the field on average. Long-term, 2.8. That's 0.1 higher than Dustin Johnson. As far as birdies are better gained goes, finished in the top 10% of field 67% of the time. So with Cantlay, two-thirds of the times that you've used him over the last year, he's paid off tremendously and beaten 10% of the field at least. So in this field, it'd be a top 15 finish right there. Gaining 1.2 strokes approach over his last 10 rounds, 0.8 strokes approach over his last 50 rounds. So very, very, very solid iron play. That's been a lot of the reason for his success. You know, very, very good tee to green. And recently, he's been putting it really well too, with 0.6 strokes gained putting over his last 50 rounds. 0.3 on POA, so that's not going to be a problem for him. Cantlay just, to me, rates out number one this field for sure. Kind of a shaky history here. So back in 2013, before his long, long injury break, where he pretty much had to restart his career in 2017, he finished ninth at this field. And it's not like he was, you know, a super young, like, amateur or something. He was, you know, a budding new PGA Tour player. Just so happened to hurt his back, and he was out for like 3 years. But since returning in 2017, finished T48, T35 in 2018, didn't play last year. So the results have been kind of mediocre, but still, I do like Cantlay a lot. Just rates out tremendously, and he's cheaper than Dustin Johnson. But I still want to be able to spend up a good amount without having to go overboard on Dustin Johnson. Cantlay is a nice little anchor for me where I feel very comfortable spending up a lot of money going to him. You've also got Paul Casey at $10,500. Very expensive for him, but he's been playing a lot overseas on the European Tour. Got a win over there recently, along with like a miscut and stuff, so it's been kind of a mixed bag, but he's really been playing that golf. You know, we saw him in the Asian Swing playing the Zozo Championship, finishing top 20 there, and then the WGC, of course. Tournament of Champions, he didn't skip that one like guys like Stenson and Rose did. And then the American Express, the other, you know, similar event to this one, he finished T21. Here he's finished top 10 every time, runner-up last year. Ranks third in the field in projected round score. You know, long-term, you know, the stats are kind of okay. You know, he hasn't been playing as well as he was playing like maybe like 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago, where he was on just a really, really good heater. But still, you know, it was fine here. Him and Cantlay finished T21 here at the U.S. Open. And of course, he's crushed it every time at this exact event over the last few years. His stroke scanned approach, recently it's gone down to 0.4 over his last 10 rounds, but on average, he gains about 0.8 strokes per round. One of the better stroke scanned approach players historically of anyone in this entire field. That's what the top three guys really have in common. They don't have that in common at all with Jason Day, but we'll get to him. So Casey, you know, it's super expensive. We're used to him being like a 9K guy, 8K guy, but this is just where the gap of talent really starts to drop off very quickly. But I think the gap in salary just isn't enough for me to want to use Casey over Cantlay. But I expect Casey to be popular, probably higher owned than Cantlay. But for me personally, I'm paying up for Cantlay. That's just kind of where I'm going in this range. But I'm not going to shy away from Casey. He's probably going to be my second highest owned guy of all the five-digit guys. Now Jason Day, incredible history here. His last seven finishes, I mean, he makes a cut every time. He's finished fourth last year, runner up the year before, with, you know, lost alongside Dustin Johnson in that playoff to Ted Potter of all people. Phil Mickelson is there too. Ted Potter beat them all. You've got fifth in 2017, 11th in 2016, fourth in 2015. T65 in 2014, the only year was shaky, but you know that's the year that Brant Snedeker missed the cut as well. I don't know, kind of a weird year that year, but sixth place in 2013. It's just a super solid history here. Lately, it's been kind of weird. You know, missed the cut pretty badly at the Mayakoba Classic, but the Farmers Insurance Open, another course where he has a very similar course history of extremely good course history. There, he finished T16 there. Problem with him is his driving accuracy of 47%. That's just horrendous. It's been so bad recently. You know, same reason for Phil Mickelson and Jordan Spieth's decline. But Day, that's just been a thing about him. He's losing over a stroke approach over his last 10 rounds, shot link rounds at least, whatever we could gather there. Over the last 25 weeks, he's played 9 events with an average field rank split of 48%. So he's losing on average to the field. That is really bad. Compare that to Cantlay, who's played 7 events in that span, beating 87% of the field on average. Only a $600 price difference in between them. The only thing really keeping them apart, honestly, is, you know, some really good history from Days where it's not as great from Cantlay. But again, I think, you know, I'm just going to Cantlay here for sure in this range. I don't see the case for Day too much. It's just a course history play, I think. And then Casey, you know, I like him more, but really liking Cantlay a lot this week. And you've got Brant Snedeker at $10,100. Two-time winner here. Missed the cut here last year. Also missed the cut at the U.S. Open here last year. And also missed the cut last week at the Waste Management Phoenix Open. So, you know, started the year off great. The Sony, the Farmers Insurance Open, you know, was third in that. It was incredible there. The Farmers and this event here, Pebble Beach, they're very similar but also very different. So, of course, this is like the shortest course on tour. This Rotorua is the longest course on tour. But they've got some very similar kind of shots you got to take as far as like elevation differences. They're in a very similar location in California, right near the coast. But you're going to have to hit a lot of the same kind of shots to get by here as you would at the Farmers Insurance Open. It's just going to be a lot shorter. But anyway, yeah, I don't mind, you know, if the Farmers is kind of one of those tournaments I'm looking at. If you did well here, I'd kind of expect you to do well here as well in a way. You know, very similar Poa Greens and all that. And that's something where Snedeker has been awesome in the past historically. He crushes all these West Coast Poa events. So, you know, he's someone that you could look to for sure. But I don't know. Missed his last two cuts here at this course in 2019. And, you know, other than that, you've got the fourth place finish in 2017, the two wins in 2015 and 2013. Other than that, you know, you got missed cuts in 2014, 2011, skipped it in 2012. I don't know. I've loved Snedeker. I've been using him a lot throughout the early part of this year. But he ranks 56th in projected fantasy points per round on DraftKings. I think he's a much stronger play on FanDuel. Yeah, he ranks 40th in the field in FanDuel scoring. So he's definitely, of all the studs, he's someone that scores way more on FanDuel, just with how their scoring is set up, than on DraftKings. Also with this course, his best hole type by far is long par fours. He's fifth in the field in that. You know, kind of struggles with shorter par fives, which you're going to see more of than the longer par fives. And also the short par fours, that's his worst, that's easily his worst par four type. And you're going to be seeing a lot of those here. So, I don't know. I don't think the course matches for Snedeker very much. I mean, I love Snedeker a lot. Probably still going to play him a decent amount. But, you know, I kind of like being a little underweight to him, especially compared to how he's been in the last few events. And he's so much more expensive now. Like, over $10,000 for Snedeker. That, you know, kind of shows that that's a weak field here, for sure. Now, Matt Kuchar at $9,900. Again, seems very overpriced. Actually rates out number one for us in projected fantasy points per round on DraftKings, which is kind of insane. But if you look at what he does good, he does everything good. Honestly, seventh in the field at short par four scoring. And I think he's like third in the field in DraftKings scoring on short par fours. Does really well at those. Really good at the short par fives. He's 13th in that. I think he's top five in DraftKings scoring on those as well. Yeah, the leader in the field is Alex Noren at as far as DraftKings points per round, or DraftKings points per hole, sorry, on short par fives go. He has 2.41 DraftKings points on average on short par fours. Snedeker is 2.39, so 0.02 of a difference between him and the best in this field. It's very, very close there, but you know, Snedeker just crushes the type, or not Snedeker, sorry, Kuchar, crushes the type of holes that you need to have some success here. Those are his best holes, so kind of the opposite of a Jason Day. So, you know, the course fit for me, honestly, is really good, but he also doesn't have, like, the best history here either. Withdrew in 2010 and didn't play for a very long time until 2017, where he missed the cut. T62 in 2018. Then last year he finished 22nd, and in the U.S. Open he finished 16th. So I don't know. He's it's very hard to say with, you know, the course rotation and, you know, being a U.S. Open setup last year that you know, Kuchar's just so good at majors consistently. But you think about what you need to do well here, and that's, you know, hit your strokes. Hit your approach strokes, hit your iron shots really well. That's specifically what Kuchar does. And he's also a very, very good Poa putter. Putts much better on Poa than on other types of surfaces. And yeah, he just matches up perfectly. He's been hitting only 283 off the tee, but that's perfectly fine here. Everyone's going to be hitting at 283 off the tee. Only numbers I'm seeing that are going in the wrong direction that I don't like really are his birdies are better gained and greens regulation percentage. But those are things he's historically pretty decent, especially like greens regulation percentage. Always a really good driver of the ball. It's never really been in question. But yeah, Kuchar, you know, been kind of an up and down swing season for him recently. But you know, 16th last week at the Waste Management, and always a top 10 bet. And I could see him winning this thing, honestly. He won a lot last year. I really like being overweight on him. He's actually the one stud in this field that's trending backwards on Vegas. He started at like 21-1. Right now he's like 23-1. An 8% drop in that, but I don't really care too much. I hope he's not popular at all. He could be in the single digits as far as ownership goes, because that's a lot to pay for Kuchar, you'd think, but I do like this play a lot. I've got Matthew Fitzpatrick at $9,700. I thought he was going to be a little bit more popular because you can see he's actually been doing a lot of work on the European Tour, getting some top 10s and stuff. But if you're just game logging, I found out that I guess DraftKings got rid of all the European Tour events. It kind of refreshed it like they did the PGA Tour events for the swing season. So, you know, that might keep his ownership down a little bit. That, and he debuted here last year by missing the cut by a couple strokes, so that's also not very good. Who knows what to make of him, though? And his two starts in America since the beginning of the fall season, it's not even been in America. He went to Asia, played at the Zozo Championship, finished like last, and then played a WGC event in China, finished seventh. That was very good. He did play here at the US Open last year and finished 12th. He did really well, so... you know, not good at this event last year, but pretty darn good at the U.S. Open for what it's worth. You think about, you know, his game, it seems like he would have a great game for this course. I think I was on him a lot last year. He hits 76% of his greens in regulation. That's right up there with, like, Cantlay, among the best in the field. Driving accuracy has always been something he's been great at, and hits in the upper 280s as far as distance. He's always been pretty short off the tee, but very accurate, and that's kind of what you want here. He didn't miss cuts last year on the PGA Tour, but like I said, he did tend to finish last in some no-cut events, so it's kind of give or take there. But recently, from what we've seen, what we've been able to see, his last 10 measured rounds, 0.8 strokes gained approach, and it's pretty darn good. Yeah, I don't know, just such an expensive price, very overpriced. I don't know if I'll get to him too much, but I couldn't see him being overly owned either now, especially over there on FanDuel, but I guess it's even now. Neither of them show the European Tour stuff, but I think people will look into what he's been doing over there, and he's usually very solid over there. He's been playing well, but still, just super expensive for him. And then Phil Mickelson at $9,500. Crazy expensive, but it makes sense. Winner last year, runner-up in 2018, runner-up in 2016, winner in 2012. He's won this thing four times. If there's one thing that Pebble is known for, it's known for repeat winners. I know Marco Mira, he won this thing like five times. You see a lot of guys just have repeat success here. Day, obviously. Spieth, Dustin Johnson, these guys continually crush this course over and over. So, you know, the same thing could have been said about the American Express, however, the Desert Classic. He always does well there. He finished 128th, missed the cut by a mile there. He rates out 117th in this field in projected round score. His driving accuracy recently has been 48%, right down there with Day in the miserable territory, losing tons of birdies and fantasy points to the field. He only beat 50% of the field over the last year, 38% of the time. That is disgustingly low. Just overall very bad, 44% field rank in 24 events played last year. That's super scrub numbers. When you could just pay $1,000 more and get Casey, you know, who at least beats 69% of the field. It's very nice. Or even pay up for Cantlay, beats 83% of the field on average. I mean, that's why you just keep coming to Cantlay. All the guys underneath Cantlay, it's so hard to justify playing them this week. And Mickelson's just crazy overpriced. You're playing him only for the course history. You know, of course, this is, you know, he's probably like one of the best here So it goes without saying, but again, with the American Express, it kind of showed that there's obviously just something wrong with Phil. He hasn't done well recently. He did finish third in Saudi Arabia last week. I'll give him that. But then again, just like Dustin Johnson, a little bit of concern with them coming all the way over from Saudi Arabia. So I don't know. Obviously, he made the trip there and did pretty well, but it's just a horrible overpricing for Phil, and he's going to get some ownership just because of that crazy course history. But I liked it in the fade with Chez Reavie last week, and I like it this week with Mickelson. You just got to get off of that. Brandon Grace, he's finished 28th and 20th here in the last 2 years. He won at the South African Open, his hometown event, a few weeks back. Last week at the Waste Management, he debuted second there the year before. Had another top 10 with a 9th place finish there. His first good finish in America in quite some time. So that's encouraging to see from him. Been crushing greens of regulation. Crushing stroke scanned approach also was one of the best approach guys last week. I actually do like this play, even though it's crazy, crazy expensive for Brandon Grace, who has been just awful in America. Missed the cut here at the U.S. Open last year, but I don't know. There's, again, it's slim pickings up here, to be quite honest. I've got Graham McDowell, who won a major here a long time ago. 7th in 2014. 18th in 2019. You know, some good finishes for him. A horrible miscut in 2018. But last we saw of him was the Sony Open, where he finished 4th. Kind of out of nowhere. I think he'll probably get a little bit of ownership here because he's coming fresh off of a win in Saudi last week, you know, beating out like Phil Mickelson and Dustin Johnson. So, I think that there's a reason to believe that he'll be somewhat popular as far as ownership goes. Been losing a bunch of strokes off the tee, but gaining a ton with his putter, with his approach game. Even around the green, doing well there. Just losing lots of strokes off the tee because he's hitting it short and he's hitting it inaccurate. But if the off the tee stuff's going to matter just less overall this week, be interested to see if that, you know, really works into McDowell's favor. And obviously he's got that history here. Last year at the U.S. Open, finished 16th. So, you know, he's been great every time he's teed it up here. But other than that, you know, most of the statistics point away from him. I guess he's pretty decent at shorter courses, but I don't know. It's been kind of weird. He hasn't been playing very consistently, at least like he used to. He did play 20 events last year. He was honestly, I guess, yeah, he was fine. I mean, the first, you know, through his 20 events, he beat 68% of the field on average. Pretty good. Just over his last 8, only 56% of the field, and that's including that 4th place finish that we last saw him at. So he had been struggling a little bit, but off and on, bouncing back and forth between here and the European Tour, but obviously is in some hot form, finishing 1st and 4th in his last few events and at a place where he can blow up. So I would expect McDowell to get a lot of ownership, and that's the only time I've really said about McDowell recently, unless it's been like an off event during a major or something. But yeah, there's a reason for it. Yeah, Victor Hovland at $9,100 missed the cut by a stroke last week, but here's the thing with him. He also missed the cut before that at the Mayakoba Classic. Now, he had also been playing in Europe, you know, he was okay, you know, just exploring the world, doing his thing. Finished mid-pack at the no cuts and in Asia. But before that, you know, he had an awesome 2019 season. Really exploded out of the bag. Showed that with, you know, his off the tee game and his approach game, he has that part of his game down pat for sure. It's his around the green game where he's been struggling. Poa putting also very, very bad for him so far from what we've seen. The only thing is with Hovland here, he won this event in the 2000, or he won at this course in the 2018. U.S. Amateurs, which is like a humongous tournament. It's like there's a stroke play, and then there's like a 64-person like elimination tournament. He won that entire thing. So even though he has no course history here, he's definitely familiar with this course. And also, if you look back to last year's U.S. Open, he finished 12th there. Now, he rakes out second in the field in projected round score behind only Cantlay. There's a considerable gap between the two, but still, not bad. You know, sixth in projected fantasy points per round. Now, recently, his greens regulation percentage has been pretty low. It's left a lot to be desired, and from what we can gather the shot link rounds that we've seen recently, it's been his around the green game that has been his hardcore struggle. It's not even been the putter. He's actually been pretty good with the putter recently. It's just, you know, he continues to gain strokes, ball striking, nonstop. That's not a problem for him. It's just been around the green. He's been losing like a stroke per round constantly, and that's just a problem for him. Now, I could see that being an issue here with all the, you know, the small greens and the sand and all that. So that's the one bit of caution I'd put up there. But so far in the two times that we have seen him play this course, he's been magnificent. But, of course, he hasn't played Spyglass, because Spyglass was it was kind of the semi-host. It was like the co-host course at that amateur. But last year at the U.S. Open, of course, that was all Pebble. So, yet to play Monterey Peninsula. So, I don't know how that'll change things. You know, he's never been in this environment either. And this is usually an event where you don't want to take first-timers because it's so different than the feel of a normal PGA Tour event. But not sure how many people will take Hovland. His ownership projection is going to be a little hard to nail down. He's coming in with better odds than McDowell, but I think McDowell will have his own unique draw that's kind of hard to predict. With Hovland, I'm not sure how many people are going to be aware of him winning the amateur. I'm sure that will get out, of course. Finished T12th at the U.S. Open. I think people will definitely know that and remember him, because it was a very impressive performance from him. And, of course, statistically in stat models, he's going to pop because he's been crazy. 302 yards off the tee with a 72% driving accuracy. That's absurd. So if you're just looking at it statistically, of course Hovland's going to pop for the stats you need here. But if you're game logging, if you're just looking at game logs, even if it includes zero stuff, it's like, I don't think anyone would pick him from game logging. So I don't know. I think he's probably someone that's going to be used in optimizers, maybe not used so much in hand builds and, you know, the low entry, very casual kind of tournament. So I don't know, I'd consider that one playing him, but I do like him in GPP this week. Then Jordan Spieth, God, I don't know what to do with him, ever. He's $9,000, very good history here. In seven events played, he's played this 7 years in a row now. God, he's getting old. But ever since he was a wee lad, he's been playing here. He's made the cut every single year, won in 2017, and only had one finish outside of the top 22. Yeah, 22nd was his worst finish in his first six starts, and then T45 last year. Of course, last year is when he saw the wheels really fall off for him, and the wheels are still falling. They've been falling for a while, and they're just off, and he's just kind of scooting along. Finished almost last of the Zozo Championship, bottom half of the field at the WGC, T55 at the Farmers, just, again, does what he did throughout the second half of last year, where he would be hot in rounds one and two and then completely fall off on the weekend. That happened at the Farmers. They didn't even make the weekend at the Waste Management Phoenix Open last week, missing the cut by multiple strokes. I don't know what to do with Spieth. Horrible driving accuracy, and that's not even a short-term trend for him anymore. That's a long-term trend. He's just bad with his driver. 58% of his greens are regulation made. That is by far the lowest of anyone. Not only in like the stud territory, I don't see anyone above 7K that's been missing as many greens as him. No one, like, the lowest I see is like Rafa Cabrera Bello, who's barely been playing with a 64% greens are regulation percentage. Spieth is at 58% right now. It's so bad. And you need greens and reg here. You just need them. Losing strokes off the tee, losing strokes approach, that's been a constant for him. His irons have been a struggle. I don't know. No one's going to play him, really. I do see him being bet up a little tiny bit in Vegas, but that's just going to be course history stuff. I don't know. I would much rather take the next guy I'm going to talk about here. To start off this little 8K range, nice little pocket of value here before you get to kind of the chalk of this range. So we're starting off with Daniel Berger, $8,900. Seems very overpriced for Berger if you've been following recently, but If you've been following since he won Rookie of the Year in 2015, pretty much since DraftKings started covering golf, this is a fair price point for Berger. He's kind of back to sort of where he belongs. He makes about 86% of his cuts. This year it's been amazing. Had the missed cut at the Houston Open. That was pretty bad. But other than that, it's been all top 40 finishes. Ninth last week at the Waste Management. But of course, that's a course that he had a ton of top 10s at anyway. The only time he's played this event, back in his rookie season, 2015, he did finish top 10. Hasn't played since then, but yeah, he's just in incredible form. I'm really looking forward to using him throughout the Florida swing. In his hometown there, always does really well in that part of the season, but I guess the form has really started early for him this year. Yeah, just playing some really good golf. Price is getting up to about where it needs to be. He's probably adequately priced, but statistically, it's just a lot of positives. Gaining strokes in every category, especially, tee to green. And his approach has actually recently been up a lot, you know, compared to how he's usually playing. Good on the short courses. And finishes top 25% of fields 58% of the time. That's a pretty darn good compared to all the other guys in this range. So not a bad play for Berger. I like him. I think his ownership will hit double digits, even though the price is pretty high here, but I still don't really mind him at all. You know, it's nice to find someone I actually want to play with all the fades I've been talking about up to this point, or I guess down to this point, I guess you could say. Speaking of fades, I always want to fade Cam Champ, but I guess he finally figured out how to make cuts, which is crazy. Long-term, he's missed 48% of his cuts. Recently, he's only missed 18% of his cuts, at least over the last 6 months. So really good stuff from Champ. Started off the swing season, got a win at the Safeway Open, which, you know, kind of a similar-ish sort of course. California, you know, short, a lot of fairways hit and that. Missed the cut the next week at the Shriners. Sometimes you see that out of winners. It just kind of happens. But after that, just five straight made cuts, and they're pretty darn good made cuts. Most recently, T16 at the Farmers Insurance Open. I don't know. He's just been playing pretty well. He destroys the ball 324 off the tee, but it's not going to help you much here. Gaining all the strokes off the tee, where he's gaining just absurd amounts of strokes. The biggest issue has been around the green. That's where I start to pump the brakes a little bit. It's been kind of a problem for him, and he's going to need that skill here. But, you know, debuted with a made cut here last year, and that's saying something. I mean, I don't mind him for GPPs. Great for GPP formats. Projects out really well for fantasy scoring. Love him as a showdown play. But, you know, don't feel that great about week-long at least. So I'll probably get more exposure to him over there on showdown. And then Alex Noren, someone that's just been playing well anywhere he's been recently. This year, three top 15 finishes in his first four events on the PGA Tour. Most recently, 14th at the other three-course event, the American Express. So he's been playing great. You know, long-term, his numbers have been kind of weird, but I know he just, you know, it used to show the European Tour stuff, right? So he was doing really well over there. So Noren, I think when we were looking at him on DraftKings at the American Express, it would show him as like 10 out of 10 cuts made. But now that's just been refreshed, so I think it'll probably show just 4 out of 4 cuts made for him. Maybe that lowers his ownership a tad, but the thing with him is what we've seen from him is something we haven't seen from him in a while, and that's insanely good approach numbers. As around the green stuff, he's always been kind of good with that, and that's where he's gaining the second most strokes. Off the tee, it's just kind of whatever. But yeah, it's honestly, it's been pretty solid. You know, about 300 off the tee, 60% driving accuracy, about normal for kind of a bomber. But the issue is going to be the putter. He just can't really putt, and if he can put together a decent putting round, I think Noren can do some work. Now, of course, he has not played this course outside of the U.S. Open last year where he missed the cut. So he has that going against him. Plus, he's also a much worse putter on POA, so that's also working against him. But I don't know, I'll probably get a little bit of exposure to him this week. I like this little range from Champ all the way down to the next guy I talk about, Kisner. Actually, it'll be the second to next guy I talk about, because I got to talk about the chalk first. Got to have a little chalk report. Russell Knox at $8,600. Going to be the chalk. What can I say? His season so far has been absolutely perfect for this wing season. Started off with a missed cut, and then after that, 9 straight made cuts, all top 50 finishes. A par 72 courses over the last year. He's played 8 of them. He's number one in the field, I think. Yeah, he's number one in this field at par 72 courses, beating 81% of players on average. Over the last 15 weeks, he's played 8 events, beating 80% of the field on average, finishing the top 25% of fields 61% of the time, gaining a million strokes approach, also been putting very hot lately. He's got everything going on. He's just a little shorter off the tee, and you can overcome that easily this week. Did not play in the U.S. Open last year, but he did finish top 15 here at this event over the last 2 years. I think that Knox is going to be the chalk, pushing 20%, and in some contests where it gets really chalky, like high entry stuff, cash games, he's going to be super high owned. Just really sticks out to me, and he's been a cash game staple. He's been, I think, in my my notes, he's been in my cash core every single week, and you know, you just got to keep riding. I don't see any reason for that to change this week. When I think of a reason to get off of him, I will, but just going to keep riding the gravy chain. And I was considering using him in one and done. It's a really good spot to use him in one and done, I think. But there are a few other options that I'm considering. So I was going to fade him in GPPs because of that, but now I'm going to kind of do just sort of the normal thing. I think I'll be like even to the field in tournaments and then use him in my cash game lineup for sure. Just be a little bit overweight to him overall, even though it's a little hard to, but I do like that chalk this week. One of the better chalk plays in my opinion. You got Kevin Kisner at $8,500. Might go a little bit underlooked being right next to Knox there. He has some good finishes here along with a mix of some missed cuts here. So, kind of up and down, but you know, this should really be a course that he's good at, being shorter off the tee and having a good driving accuracy percentage and being good with his stroke scanned approach. Much better POA putter than he has been recently. He made the cut here at the U.S. Open in last year, 10th in 2017. Missed the cut at the American Express, but before that he was 4th at the Sony Open. I followed him for a little bit. He looked really solid, honestly. His game was just looking strong. I was following him with Matsuyama. When I was following that crowd, and the poor guy, I think it was him and Webb, were completely ignored, as all the Japanese fans just cheered on Matsuyama and just let Webb and Kisner kind of do their own thing. And I don't know, maybe it gave him enough solace that they were both able to have top 5 finishes that week. But one thing we have seen from him recently is that the stroke scanned approach, they've been seriously solid as irons are putting in work, and that's kind of something that he's done historically. Of course, he's had bad finishes at the Mayakoba, RSM, American Express, and Zozo so far this year, so the form's not really there, but 2019, he had a really strong year, honestly, even got a win at the match play. So I don't know, I might like him as a bit of a contrarian play, maybe. It just depends on how popular he's going to end up being. Cabrera Bayo, he has some good finishes here, 22nd and 26th over the last 2 years. He has not been playing in America anytime recently. This is his first time since, I don't know. He only played the Asian swing. I think it's first time since like the playoffs last year, honestly. He ranks 5th in projected fantasy points per round, but 60th in projected round score. Definitely one off to investigate here. Yeah, it's no, he's just really good at short par fours, medium length par fours, and short par fives. Just really horrible at all things par three. So if you need someone for your fantasy par three contest lineups, fade Rafa Cabrera Bayo. Just do it. Just fade him. Other than that, not really too much sticks out. You know, he's shorter off the tee, so he will be helped out a little bit here. But the greens are rag numbers. You know, the field rank number is hard to tell with him just not really playing very much, especially not setting foot in America for quite some time. Very popular play this week will be $8,300 here, Max Homa. So he finished top 10 here last year at this event, and he's also finished top 10 in the last 2 weeks. And we saw a lot of Vegas action on him as well. I haven't seen any Vegas action this week, but at 50-1, this is by far the lowest his odds have ever been in his career. had a very, very rough start to the swing season. You know, and that was, I guess, it looks like it was circumvented with a top 25 finish at the Century Tournament of Champions, but with only 30 people on that field, it's actually not a very good sign. But since going to California, his home and native land, he's been, you know, making every cut, and those top 10 finishes over the last 2 weeks, they kind of speak for themselves. So I think a lot of people see that and see that he was really good at Pebble here last year. And yeah, he did miss the cut here in 2017, the last time he played before that. But I don't know. I don't mind fading a guy at what is by far his highest salary that he's ever been at and might ever be at just going forward, unless he just keeps it rolling here. But I don't know. I'm definitely going to go with other guys in this range that are just way better golfers. Guys like Adam Hadwin, who started off the season with a runner-up at the Safeway and fourth at the Shriners, before, you know, just kind of taking it easy, you know, doing some, you know, being kind of crappy in the Asian swing, but came back to it last week at the Waste Management, was up there on the leaderboard, but kind of settled back into a T40 finish. But he makes 89% of his cuts, just way better than guys in his range. Hadwin, I like a lot this week. Perfect course history here. He's never missed the cut, top 20 last year. Definitely going to be a play for me. Again, the plays are kind of few and far in between, so I'm gonna load up on these guys I like. And Hadwin, again, is somebody I like. Was, you know, part of the 4-for-4 and made cuts I had last week in my core. He was my value core guy. Ended up working out. And then to finish out the 8K range, Kurt Kitayama. So this is a guy that I thought was gonna be a little bit more popular than he's gonna end up being because of the European Tour stuff's been crushing it in Europe, but now that's kind of all gone from his game log, and I think people have to investigate a little further to see that. So other than that, you know, he missed the cut at the Shriners and has the T28 at the WGC event, which is actually pretty good. I think he's nearing top 100 in the world right now. So I mean, a lot of people are just going to go, who the hell is this, and skip past him. And, you know, I guess rightfully so if you're just looking at his American stuff. But yeah, you're definitely going to need to look into his European Tour stuff. He's been crushing over there. The stats here are kind of laughable with the low sample size and all that, showing him at a 34% driving accuracy percentage, which, yeah, I'm gonna bet that regresses quite a little bit. That would be impressive if he actually kept it that low, but I'm not too concerned there. I'll use some shares in GPP, but I'm not gonna make him like a core play or anything. A very similar play to Homa here is Hoagie, Tom Hoagie. So he's missed the cut here the last 2 years, but he's on a heater, absolute heater, over the last 4 weeks since the season officially started at the Sony. 12th, 6th, 5th, and 25th. Super, super red-hot start to his West Coast swing here. I'm probably going to play this guy. I'm much more inclined to play him over Homa. He's cheaper, and it's just been his iron game. Hokie's always had a very good iron game, but right now it is absolutely like smoking hot. 1.2 strokes gained approach over his last 10 on average, gaining a similar amount putting as well. Usually he loses strokes putting, but over the last 10 rounds he's gained 1.2 strokes putting on average. Now before that he had missed like 4 or 5 straight cuts coming in, but I don't know, maybe I am leaning, I'm kind of convinced myself both ways here, but the irons have been just so hot. If they just continue to be like they are, and even long term, he's gaining, you know, over his last 50 rounds, gains 0.7 strokes on average. That's really, really good. I'm looking for those great iron players, and Hoagie obviously has like the best irons of anyone in this field currently. I'd probably be remiss to hop off him. I think he's just going to continue rolling here, and even if he just barely makes the cut, he's probably going to make a lot of birdies just with how many opportunities he's going to find himself at. A guy who I'm going to get off of again, here's JB Holmes. He kind of screwed me over a bit, me calling him a fade last week after the random good finish at the Farmers Insurance Open. Now, the thing about the last 2 weeks, both of them have come at courses he's insanely good at historically. Tons of top five finishes at both Torrey Pines and TPC Scottsdale. So he finished T16 in both of those. Before that, if you go any further back, his history is just tragic. He Over the last year, he had a 43% field rank. That's horrible. In 24 events, just god-awful. But he did actually do some good work with his approach game. That's where he had been just miserable. That and his putter. And his putter is also very hot over the last two events. So he's been bad here the last few years, missing the cut. But if you look back further, he has some top 10 finishes here. Runner-up in 2010. Missed the cut pretty badly here in the U.S. Open. So, two horrible events here last year. But, I don't know, $7,900, that's too much to ask for J.B. Holmes, who is, you know, before that was in the lower 6K range constantly, and no one ever played him. It's just another course history play. Showdown kind of play for sure, because he is somebody that will put up eagles. So, definitely a slight breaker. Potentially for Showdown, but I don't like him in week long still. Jim Furyk at $7,800. Core play for me this week. Core value play. Always makes the cut here. This course is pretty much made for him. We've seen him sparsely on tour so far, but when we have seen him, it's at courses that he likes and courses that are built well for him, who can only hit it 280 off the tee. And he does well at them. He's made 89% of his cuts, you know. At short courses last year, he beat 79% of the field on average. Strokes gained approach, and his wedge game is always top tier. This is a wedge fest, and this is Jim Furyk. Jim Furyk, wedge fest. It's like peanut butter and jelly. And he's only $7,800. I think he's going to be popular. I'm definitely not the only person on him, but I don't care how popular he is. I'm going to play a lot more than the field on my Jim Furyk shares. I know he is not the right play for Showdown, I'll tell you that. Okay, he's probably much better for cash games and hybrids than he would be for Showdown, because he's not going to get you like eagles and stuff, but he's going to avoid the double bogeys. He's going to hit every green of regulation, every fairway. He's going to hit like 84% of his drives on the fairway. Just watch. And he's going to get away with it. He's going to get away with a super short drive here because it's the shortest course on tour. This is just what you do with him, I think. So, love me some Furyk. Piercy, he hadn't been very good this swing season, but he had a pop-off kind of performance last week at the Waste Management. Another place where strokes gained approach matters a lot, and that's what Piercy does well. He just can't really putt. He got away from the POA for 1 week last week, and he finally has a good finish, but now he's back on the POA, and he's just not a good POA putter at all. The thing I noticed about Piercy last week, just watching him, was he thrives in that kind of, you know, crazy college environment. He loved it. Now, he has finished top 20 here the last 2 years, so I don't know. Maybe the hustle and bustle of this kind of event is, you know, pretty good for him. I mean, he's made all the cuts here the last 3 years, and then didn't play the 5 years before that. And in 2011, 2010, he missed some cuts, but he was a totally different golfer back then. But didn't make the cut here at the U.S. Open last year. Don't mind him. I'm going to use, you know, this little range is a lot of people I want to use. He's one of them, but just not nearly as much as Furyk. I got Von Taylor here also, former winner, who's yet to crack the top 50 in his three starts since his win in 2016. The year before that, in 2015, finished top 10 as well, and then missed his two cuts before that. So very up and down stuff from Taylor. Didn't play at the U.S. Open here last year. Now, he was in some hot form over the 3 weeks from the Mayakoba Classic to the Sony Open, where he finished T12. The American Express, he would have missed the cut for sure if it wasn't a three-round cut. So that saved him. Caught himself up on Saturday, made the cut, came T43. And then missed the cut awfully, ruining some key lineups last week. Screwed me over at the Waste Management Phoenix Open. Do you go back to him this week? I mean, last week we were at a bomber's course. This is an accuracy course. Probably got to go back to Von Taylor. He's very Furyk-esque in his approach. So someone I'm going back to for sure. Kevin Na, someone that also really rates out well for this course. You just never know if he's going to withdraw or not. He's been kind of semi-injured, but he's actually pulled through it the last few times he's teed it up. Actually did well at the American Express, so I wouldn't mind getting me some Na. He has some win equity, won at the Shriners, also won at the Greenbrier recently. So Don't mind Nah. He can get away with his 282-yard drive here, that's for sure. $7,600, that's got a few guys I like here. Lucas Glover finished 7th and 11th his last two times here. He's been very under the radar recently, but he rates out 9th in this field in projected round score, 11th in projected fantasy points per round. Really solid as far as off the tee and approach. That's what he does well. Way better POA putter than the other grass types, that's for sure. Love me some Glove. He was only 4% owned last time we saw him at the Farmers Insurance Open. So very, very low ownership and a low price for him. I like him there. And you've got Stallings, who has made 5 cuts in a row now. He's made 6 out of his 7 to start the year. And his history here over the last 3 years, a 14th, a 7th, and a 3rd last year. Just very good at Pebble in particular. I don't know what it is, but really the West Coast events too, like the Farmers. He's won that at Torrey Pines. Just something about it. And his ownership's very, very, very low. So another good play to make there, honestly. You got Lashley, who kind of popped up last week, finishing T3, but I'd be very wary of him because he's withdrawn twice since, like, November. So a risky commodity there, but, you know, he's going to have ultra-low ownership. You got Pat Perez, who has a lot of success here outside of last year when he was playing injured. I can kind of scratch that one out. We saw a very similar course history from him at the Farmers, where he had great history until last year when he was kind of playing hurt, but finished T55 there. Not too much to write home about. He does rate out 4th in projected fantasy points per round. He's very good at the short par 5s and scoring, so probably a showdown target there. You got Patrick Rogers, who's getting a little hot now. He's made a lot of cuts, which has not been something he's done recently. So he's kind of getting back in form a bit after maybe a year or two of really, really underperforming what we all thought, you know, he was capable of. We saw him finish top 10 here in 2018, but last year, missed cut from him. Probably a guy we're going to get on. Vegas is really drifting on him. He's gone from 81-1 to 72-1. One of the biggest movers so far in the week. Another mover here at $7,300. Play I like is Maverick McNealy. He missed the cut here in 2018, but at least he's played the course. He's perfect so far on the year. At least his last 8 events played, he's made the cut. Most recently, a T15 at the Farmers Insurance Open. So at $7,300, very underpriced for how good he's been. He's an amazing POA putter. Gains 1.1 strokes on POA on average. So loving that about McNealy. He's going to be a core value play for me. You can probably get on Sung Kang, who has 2 top 20 finishes here in his last 3 starts. Top 20 at the Farmers Insurance Open as well. Has made a lot of cuts this year. Also top 20 at the Zozo and, you know, had a win last year on tour, actually. So it's good to see him back in form. He's been losing strokes to the putter recently, but POA is the one grass type they actually gains on, so you can look to use him there. Adam Long has been kind of surprising. He's usually not that great, but runner-up at the Mayakoba and 8th last week at the Waste Management. So probably someone you can look to use. His approach game has been pretty solid, just struggling around the green. Then Nick Watney at $7,300. He has some history here. 6th in 2011, runner-up in 2015. I think, this is just me going off memory, I think he had a really good performance at that U.S. Open, not this last year, but the one before that, like 2010, where McDowell won. I don't know. Hit me up on Slack if you remember. I'm too lazy to look it up right now, but I think he has like a bunch of really good finishes here historically. Even though he doesn't look the oldest, but he's kind of like Charles Howell III, where he's like, wait, he's that old? Man, that dude's old. He's way older than he looks. So another core value play I got here for you guys, $7,200. Harry Higgs has been just awesome so far to start the year. Runner-up at the Bermuda Championships, 9th at the Farmers, and 25th last week at Waste Management. Rates out 3rd in projected fantasy points per round, 5th in projected round score. Of course, we're going to look into that a little bit because it's just so, you know, it pops out. And the sample size is a little bit low, but I'm just realizing now that we have 666 holes of data on Mr. Harry Higgs. So yeah, there's that. That's an interesting it's an interesting thing. Okay, so I can see why he's popping now for sure. He's second in this field behind only Cantlay. Cantlay was third. He's actually better than Cantlay. Who's number one here in this this split, short par fours, the key split this week? It is Steve Stricker. How about that? Steve Stricker. Hey, I can get on Stricker this week. This is a Stricker week, but we'll get to those guys down the dumpster bin. But yeah, so second in this field in short par four scoring. I think he's number one in DraftKings points. Averages 1.36 DraftKings points per hole on short par fours. Also second in the field on long par fours and 17th in medium length par fours. So very, very good at the par four scoring. And that's with 97 holes of data. That's not a bad sample size, honestly. We've seen him play a good amount of events now. And you don't need shot link data for this hole-by-hole information. So Higgs has really, really been excelling at that exact type of hole type. And that is the type of hole type that we need here. It's the most common, which is, again, usually short par fours are by far the least common type of par fours on a course. But I got Harry Higgs circled, highlighted, underlined, and bolded. He's probably my favorite value play. Him and Furyk going to be my value core for sure. And then you've got other guys this price like Jimmy Walker, who has an extremely good history here. Four or five top tens, a T11, and a win here in 2014. He's sort of like Stallings, where he's also just kind of a West Coast warrior. He's been pretty decent, all things considered, to start the year, but he had that huge layoff after the playoffs that I don't even know if he made last year because he was playing really poorly. Got it at seven short courses last year. He averaged a 37% field rank. That's not very good. But the thing with him is historically he was always a bomber, someone that gained strokes off the tee and with putting. Now it's like completely reversed. He loses tons of strokes off the tee, loses strokes putting, especially on POA, but gains them all with his approach. So it's kind of weird. Obviously, I don't know if everyone knows this, but Jimmy Walker, you know, he won the PGA Championship a few years back. He was honestly one of the better golfers on the PGA Tour. If he was playing at a level that he was playing at before he contracted Lyme disease a couple of years ago, he'd probably be priced around $8,500 in this field. But he's going to be way cheaper. His ownership is always going to be seriously low because people just know that about him. And his play has been really inconsistent ever since. Before, he was a really, really consistent play. Now, not so much. So remember to wear a hat when you go out in the woods. just throwing that out there. But yeah, Walker, I could get on him, honestly. He's been playing a little better. You know, and he has that insane history here. And he's cheap enough, and you get three free rounds from him. Why not, you know? And also Lanto Griffin. So, rating out amazingly statistically, as he always has, because he started off the season with all those top 20 finishes and the win at the Houston Open, 7th at Sony, and then the last 2 weeks, he fell off a cliff. Absolutely fell off a cliff. And last week, he finished, I think it was like 10 over par. It was awful. So, I don't know. He's played here once in 2018, missed the cut, but still, he at least played the course before. His ownership dropped from like 17% after the Sony to like, he missed the cut at the Farmers, and then at the Waste Management, he was like 4% owned. Now he's going to be like 2% owned or something. I don't know. Could be a nice bounce back spot, but I don't know. It's just been so bad for him over the last two events. And that was the start of the California kind of swing for him. He did finish 17th at the Safeway, but still, it's been rough. And even in Hawaii, he started 4 over initially on his round before coming back. But I don't know. Moving down here, Matthew Neesmith at $7,100. Very solid play. Five straight made cuts from him, all, you know, with some pretty darn good finishes in there, a few top 20s. Don't mind him at all at $7,100. Very good value play. Very accurate. Gaining tons of strokes, putting, and you know, through approaches, just losing him around the green. I like that play there. Mark Hubbard at $7,100. He's been playing great this year, as long as you don't have horrifying weather like you had at Sony, where he finished dead last. Other than that, he's made every cut, runner-up in Houston, top 10 last week at the Waste Management. So, as long as the weather isn't horrifyingly awful and windy and rainy, then he should be good. He is trending more than anyone in Vegas. He started at 141, now he's at 113-1, a 20% drift. That is huge movement, so... I'd be interested in getting a little Hubbard. He's way more expensive than last week when he was like $6,200, but still at $7,100, I think that's about the right price for him. With this movement, I think that's going to intrigue me to take him a little bit in GPP. That, and he's just had some top 10 finishes this year. Of all of these scrubs, almost nobody breaks 20% in the top 10% field rank split stat. Hubbard's at 36%. So 36% of the time he finished in the top 10% of fields. That's great for GPP. It's just him and Lanto here in this range down here at the bottom. No one else has good performances as often as those guys. You got some decent, like, sort of cash game value plays down here in Nick Taylor, who historically is just a really good cut maker and has three top 30 finishes here in his last 4 years playing this course. Made the cut at the U.S. Open. Rates out 18th in projected round score. One of our top value plays as far as the projections go, for sure. Good little odds value as well on there with him. And the same price, get Cameron Tringali, who's pretty much a permanent fixture in our value section every week. Missed the cut by one stroke last week at the Waste Management, but that was like his fifth or sixth missed cut at that course in a row. His history isn't too much better here, but he has made five out of his last six cuts, although only two of them were any good, but they were top 25 finishes at least. But yeah, 11th in projected round score, makes 80% of his cuts, $7,000, that is really good, liking in cash. Super strong approach game recently, gaining a really nice 0.69 strokes approach over his last 20 rounds. Last 25 rounds, my bad, but he's a good play. Matt Jones at 7,000 also has a bunch of history here. Lots of top 15 finishes at Pebble, although he did miss the cut at the U.S. Open. He's a round one showdown play for sure. Always make sure to get him in round one showdown for whatever reason. But yeah, there's just a bunch of the guys at the 7K range here. $6,900, a play I really want to point out here. Couple plays here. A couple of Bryans I want to talk about, but first we gotta talk about Brandon Wu. He's played three times in the swing season, 17th in Houston, and then T55 at both the Mayakoba Classic and Farmers Insurance Open. So 3 for 3 and made cuts. He's making all those cuts. But interesting thing I want to point out here is T35 as an amateur at the US Open at Pebble Beach. That is impressive. I think he was the low amateur, if I'm not mistaken. Really good value play here, I think. I think people will get people will probably figure out he's a good play here, but gaining strokes off the tee, approach, just rates out super well on the two par 72 courses we've seen him play at. He's beaten 77% of the field on average. That's pretty good. But again, the numbers, you know, the sample size is going to be very low with him, but from what we've seen, he's been very solid as far as making cuts. Made 4 out of 5 in his PGA Tour career so far. One of them at this very course in a major setting. So that's encouraging to hear. And only $6,900? Come on, it's a great play. As for guys we do have a sample size of, and as for guys that are Bryans, as for guys that are $6,900, about those two. So Stewart screwed me over last week after making a bunch of cuts with some top 10 finishes at the Shriners, at RSM Classic. He screwed me over missing the cut just barely. He went like bogey at the end to miss the cut on the dot last week. Very frustrating, but hey, what can you do? So Stewart, I actually missed it by two strokes, but yeah, he did make the cut here last year, but after that, it was missed cut. Couple of top 30 finishes, but then like last place after that. I don't know. Not feeling as much as I did last week, even though the course really rates out for him well. Gain strokes approach around the green, hits it 280 off the tee with 72% driving accuracy. Maybe that's better than, you know, just a bomber's course like last week. But going to the other Brian that I'm a bit more interested in, although he has missed four cuts in a row. I will say that Brian Gay has missed four cuts in a row. But here he's finished top eight the last 2 years. Gay just really likes playing at very short courses. If you look at his form before he missed those four straight cuts, 14th, 3rd, 42nd, 7th, 23rd, low-key pretty good. So I don't mind using Gay here. You know, he's gonna have no ownership, maybe like 2 or 3% or something, but I do like Gay over Stewart because you suck, Stewart. You ruined so many of my good lineups. I hate you. I hate you, man. No, but seriously, going down the $6,800 range, DJ Trahan's who I want to point out here, 18th here last year. He's been low-key really good, like making 3/4 of his cuts and having some solid finishes in there, like 24th at the Bermuda Championships, 8th at the RSM Classic, and both courses at the RSM Classic are actually somewhat similar to these courses where like they have very, very similar percentage of fairways hit and percentage of greens hit. So I thought they were kind of similar in that. And also it's a multi-course event. So just another one I'm kind of looking at. And he also finished T28 in Sony. Now he rates out 8th in projected round score and 9th in projected fantasy scoring on DraftKings. So, of course, let's dive into it on the fantasy scoring tab. On the research station that you can get at dfsarmy.com, promo code TACO. Check it out. He rates out 4th in projected FanDuel scoring per round, actually. 6th in the short par 4 scoring. Yep, that's exactly what I expected. And 14th in long par 3 scoring. And 17th in the field in short par 5 scoring. Those are the three key ranges this week. Yeah, so he rates out really well. I like me some Trahan. Now I can see why he's popping there. Really like the play. And I think he was like 1 or 2% owned a couple of weeks ago at the Farmers Open, and he missed the cut there. So now he's going to have like no ownership, I'd imagine. He not only has a T18 finish from last year here, but also a T10 finish in 2010 for what it's worth. Moving right along here. Doc Redman at $6,700. I expect him to be popular here. He's just under-owned. Great off the tee. 72% of fairways hit with a 297-yard bomb. That's pretty darn good. Making 72% of his cuts. Finishing in the top 25% of fields 50% of the time. Very good for someone in this range. And gaining tons of strokes approach, too. His downfall is just he's horrible on POA so far in his career. He averages negative 0.1 strokes putting, but negative 1.2 strokes putting on POA. So that might be an issue for him. But if he can get around that, everything else in his game really sets up for this course. Adam Schenck and Brandon Hagee might also be some guys to consider. For this course, like Hagee, he was 16th last week, and he's a guy, that got bet up a lot in Vegas for some reason over the last few weeks, and he's actually been doing kind of okay. Has two made cuts here at this course the two times he's played, so that's interesting. Moving along down to the bottom of this field, right at 6,600, 6,500. This is where I kind of come to a stop. If I'm hand building lineups, I'm not gonna scroll much farther. I'm really not. It's really hard to play a lot of the scrubs in this field because this one the field gets just extremely scrubby. Everyone here is just seriously flawed. I like David Hearn, good approach stats and stuff, but he is awful at this course, finishing like dead last the last few years. Tyler Duncan, this is probably the guy that sticks out in this range the most for me. T22 here last year, won not too long ago at the RSM Classic. Has been, you know, making some cuts, maybe missing cuts by like a stroke like he did last week, but just, you know, a good fit for the course. 285 off the tee, 70% driving accuracy percentage, very good at avoiding double bogeys. And then another guy is good at avoiding the double bogeys. Really good at avoiding double bogeys is Bo Hogg. Really bad time at the Farmers Insurance Open. I think that was the first time he actually like had a double bogey on the season, I swear, because those numbers are ultra low for him. But before that, he was 9th at the Sony, 20th at Mayakoba, 11th at the Bermuda Championship. I could see him bouncing back here. He's had some really good finishes so far this year. And then Mark Anderson, he's made 3 straight cuts, and they've had some pretty good finishes alongside him. Gained some strokes approach, putting, just not good at POA, really. You know, after that, it's really hard to recommend any plays here. I did mention Stricker earlier, and I know that I think he's missed all of his cuts so far this year, but over the last year or two, you got to remember, he's really old. He played sparingly and usually always makes his cuts. Like, I think on his career, he's like 90% of his cuts made or something crazy like that. Very Zach Johnson-esque. And apparently very good at short par 4 scoring and stuff. But I don't know. I probably couldn't even bring myself to play too much of him. I just really like the guy, but of course he's been just bad lately. And even if he does make the cut, I don't think he wins a tournament because he's not going to be birdieing and eagling a lot. But yeah, I'm going to leave the rest of this field alone. You can go with Zach Sucker, of course, $6,100. Probably the best Twitter game in golf now that Stephen Bowditch is kind of irrelevant, not on tour anymore. Not really anyone else I'm really looking at here. Maybe like Luke Donald just taking a shot in the dark. I don't know. Rob Oppenheim is an interesting one for me, like an around the green specialist at a course where that's going to matter a bit here. I don't know. So that's going to be it for me. I will see you guys next week at the Genesis Invitational. You got a lot of good guys there. Tiger Woods, Brooks Koepka. Very packed field. So be excited for that next week. And good luck this week. Hopefully get some really big scores out there like we did last week. And, you know, keep following the core. It's been awesome so far this year. Finally got the winner last week with Webb. Really excited about that. I think if you followed my core so far in the year, I've had 16 picks, you know, 4 each week, and only 2 have missed the cut, and some of them were, like, the Charles Hall III missed cut, that was just unprecedented. That was, like, his first missed cut in the West Coast swing in, like, 25 events or something. But other than that, Lanto, last week, or 2 weeks ago, was the one. Other than that, it's been all, like, top 10 finishes from these guys. Like, it's been just an amazing year so far for picks. So if you're really confident about my core, if you're really confident about Cantlay this week, Furyk, you know, keep track of that on DFS Army, of course. You're not a member, dfsarmy.com. Promo code TACO gets you that lifetime 20% off discount. Get in our Slack where it's constantly popping. We're always talking about the event. You can ask questions or whatever. Just hit me up. That'll do it. Check out the Chalk Donkey video that'll be up later today. And yeah, we're excited for the start of the Pebble Beach Pro-Am Classic, and I'll see you guys next week at the Genesis Invitational. See ya.